WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. If you're having trouble getting your kid to the dinner table because they're playing Fortnite, you are not alone. Over 200 million gamers have registered for the video game worldwide. And it's not just kids. Parents, Major League Baseball players, even the popular rapper Drake have all caught on. It's fun and popular, all right, but some say also addictive. This hour on point, hooked on Fortnite. Join us. Are your kids playing Fortnite for hours on end? Are you? What is it about this game that makes it so hard to press pause? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org, where they're on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio as well. Joining me first from NPR West in Culver City, California, is Chris Palmieri, Los Angeles Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. You can link to his great reporting on Fortnite at our website, onpointradio.org. Chris, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane. Thanks for having me.
The Fortnite phenomenon. Let's hear it again. Here it is from YouTube. The player fires a gun as opponents loot a chest. All right, Chris, there's the sound. Walk us through the actual game. What's the premise of all this?
So you're parachuted down onto this island, 100 people playing at once, and you sort of have to compete to with your wits and your weapons to be the last person standing. And you can build alliances, build forts, gain all kinds of weaponry to be the top of the pyramid.
So you can win this thing. You can actually play to the
absolutely.
End. Yeah, okay. And it's free to play across all platforms, right? Nintendo, Sony, your PC, your phone, that's part of the draw.
Yeah, that was one of the big revolutions here. It's a free-to-play game that has the quality that you'd expect of a video game console, and you can play it across all these platforms. So you can play with your friends. You can play with rappers, basketball stars, anyone. It's very social. You can chat while you're playing. And it's just a very dynamic style of play.
So a lot of games come and go, but Fortnite is really now a worldwide phenomenon. Talk about its popularity.
200 million players registered, as you said, and just really launched in this Battle Royale mode that's the most popular version in September of last year. So extraordinary growth, billion-dollar business. In fact, the founder of the company, Epic Games, just sold about $1 billion worth of stock to investors, and his company valued the whole business at $15 billion.
Wow. And a lot of social features on Fortnite. Tell us about that. You can chat with your friends. You can jump into a game with a celebrity, among other things.
Right. And one of the things that, and where the money comes from this is, although it's free to play, you can buy real money used to buy. The most popular thing is what they call skins, which is really just an outfit for your character. And one of the innovations of Fortnite is that there used to be these in-game purchases were relatively cheap. But they created this sort of limited time offers. So you pay $20 for this outfit that's unusual and rare. And so you want to be the sort of the cool kid with the newest threads. And so that creates this big demand for the, and you can also buy gadgets and other things that don't necessarily enhance your play, but make you look cooler.
Right.
And
some of these in-game purchases used to cost a dollar. Now they're costing, $15, $20, right? That's why the money's rolling in.
Right.
So talk about the constant content updates as well and how they contribute to the game's popularity.
Well, they're just constantly keeping it fresh with new sort of, maps and battles to fight. And, they're just introduced for the holidays, a gifting feature. So you can, gift some currency, in-game currency to your friends or family and that. So, they've done a fantastic job. They've just started moving into esports, where people watch other people play. I attended the first Fortnite Pro-Am earlier this year here in Los Angeles. It's extraordinarily popular. And this is really another medium that's helped contribute to the growth on Twitch, which is an Amazon streaming service where you can watch other people play. And, at any given time, Fortnite's the most popular game on there. You'll see, on a Thursday afternoon, 250,000 people watching people play Fortnite.
Wow. And the game's connection to pop culture, can't overlook that. Pro athletes, musicians, big names playing this game.
Right. Well, one of the other things that was pretty brilliant about this is, you know, what I continually talk to parents about, you know, this is a shooting game, essentially. And, you know, they say, but it's a cartoonish shooting game. So it looks like a cartoon, the superhero-y kind of cartoon. And there's these dances in the game that you buy. They're sort of like a victory dance, you know, sort of like spiking the football. But they've taken on a life of their own. And so, you know, we'll actually see athletes performing the dances on the field after they score. It's the kids playing. You know, doing the dances in school, and again, they are a source of money for the manufacturer.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now, Chris. With me from Mount Pleasant, Michigan, is Sarah Domoff, clinical child psychologist and psychology professor at Central Michigan University. She directs the Family Health Lab, which is a training clinic that seeks to promote healthy media use in adolescents. Sarah, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you just heard Chris Palmieri describe Fortnite. Sounds fun, huh? I mean, I have a 13-year-old who assures me this is not addictive. He loves it. What are you seeing? What are you hearing from the parents and the young people seeking your help on this?
Well, as we have heard from Chris, Fortnite is very popular and engaging. And you know, given its appeal and the social element of it, parents may experience a variety of challenges when managing their children's use. So, of course, we've heard about, you know, the excessive use that may, for some children, interfere with their functioning. But then there's also the social interactions piece. There can be positive social interactions, obviously. But when it becomes conflictual, we hear that there could be, you know, exposure to some aggressive content from players that children may not know. And then also it was mentioned, like, there's these microtransactions and some scams going on where children may be duped into getting currency, if you will, for this game, and it may not be a legitimate source. So those are three main areas that we hear as problematic when it comes to Fortnite.
So, okay, well, is that any different than any other fill-in-the-blank video game that's out there today?
That's a great question. No, I think in terms of when does it become problematic in trying to decipher, is this too much video game play? It's not so much that it's Fortnite in particular, but there are features of Fortnite that make it really engaging. And so part of the challenge is determining, is this enthusiastic video game play, or is it too much that it's interfering with a child's daily life?
So talk about what Chris mentioned, the cartoonish nature of Fortnite has a cartoonish feel to it, these little dances that they do. I mean, it doesn't look like there's a lot of blood and gore of the other games out there. I mean, what's your view? Isn't this pretty, you know, good stuff?
Well, I think one of the challenges, as I mentioned before, is if there aren't proper settings, children may engage with or interact with people that they don't know. And so exposure to certain inappropriate content may occur. And that's where we hear some of the like major problems from parents. So really, it's kind of important for parents, especially with younger children, to make sure that the settings are there so that they aren't interacting with people that they don't know. But in terms of when does it become problematic, it really depends on, is a child playing Fortnite to the point where he or she is not sleeping, not going to school. And so there's this distinction between playing too much and too much play that interferes with a child's life.
Let me get a caller in here. Liz is in Wadsworth, Ohio. Hi, Liz. What do you know about Fortnite?
Hi. I know a lot about Fortnite because my son loves playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked for a headphone so he could talk, interact, and I said, no, I think he's too young. He's 10 years old for that. So I do let him play. And when he gets good grades and all of that and good behavior, I get him V-Bucks. Now, my father bought him tickets to go watch the Cavaliers basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
My son said he likes basketball. And since he got to go watch the game, his stepbrother got $100 worth of V-Bucks. When my son found that out, my son was extremely upset. He said he doesn't want to watch basketball. He doesn't care about basketball. He cares about Fortnite. And now
he'd rather play Fortnite.
He deserves $100.
To buy those things, too. Liz, thank you so much. Sarah Domoff, what's the tipping point for these kids? You know, you hear our caller there. She's got a 10-year-old who'd rather play Fortnite than go to the basketball game.
Well, there are several symptoms, if you will, that we look for in terms of when does it become to the point of it being excessive or, you know, if you want to put in quotes, addictive. One is that if the child is only playing Fortnite to exclusion of other activities, so not going to school, not sleeping. There's a difference between having conflict around certain limits being set around playing Fortnite and avoiding different required activities for the child. So I really, you know, in terms of working with families and understanding when does it become an issue, I make sure that we check in to see, does a child have a balance in other activities throughout the day? And if not, what can we do to set some limits and communicate about what kind of expectations the parents have for the child in playing video games so that it doesn't interfere with their functioning at school and then with their peers?
Chris Palmieri, jump back in here. You've done some reporting on this. I'm reading about parents who have sent their children to rehab for playing too much Fortnite.
That's right. I mean, there'd been this emerging industry of sort of video game addiction counseling. It's been around a while. I've talked to people who run summer camps for it and, you know, people who make a living going around speaking to school groups and that about video game addiction. It was a big turning point in June. The World Health Organization decided for the first time to recognize video game addiction. They didn't specifically cite Fortnite, but not many people read that into the statement. And the significance of that is that, you know, insurance companies and that may then be getting billed and may have to reimburse people for this treatment. So you know, we did speak to psychiatrists and counselors who were dealing with increased volumes of kids coming in who were addicted to Fortnite. Mm.
More to come on this. Chris Palmieri, LA Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Thanks for starting us off here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sarah Domoff, stick with us. We are discussing the worldwide video game phenomenon Fortnite. And you can join the conversation, listeners. Players, Fortnite players, what do you love about this game? What keeps you coming back for more? I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. We will be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're taking a look at the hit video game Fortnite this hour and the young gamers who love it, but who may be addicted. You can join the conversation. Has playing Fortnite interfered with your kids' relationships, their schoolwork, family life, sleep? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Sarah Domoff, clinical child psychologist and psychology professor at Central Michigan University. Here's a concerned parent. Last March, Suzanne spoke to the British television program This Morning about why she thinks Fortnite is dangerous to younger players like her son Leo.
The game is so full of energy and adrenaline that when you pull them off...
But most games are.
But this is different. They are screaming at the television. They are hiding. They're calling each other's names. They're hiding in bases. They're living in it. All their friends are in it. It's just different. I have no problem with it for 16-year-olds or adults. No problem. But these guys think... They don't think it's the real world, but they're living in it with their friends. And then when they try and come out of it and come downstairs, everything's boring.
Sarah Domoff, speak to that. That's really interesting. This game is so full of energy and adrenaline. You hear that mom there talking about, you know, maybe it's okay for older kids, but these younger kids, gosh, they're really into it, maybe too much. What age group do you see struggling the most with these video games, particularly Fortnite?
That's a great question. I think one of the big things here is when it comes to managing or, you know, parenting around children's media use, not just video games, is understanding the child's individual potential risk factors. And one thing is that if the child's too young, they may not have the self-regulation skills to manage their own video game play. So it's really important for parents, especially with children who are younger, to learn as much as you can about whatever video game they want to play, not just Fortnite in particular, and play with them and see how are they handling conflicts. Is it appropriate for them? How do they kind of transition from playing video games back to the real world? And then importantly, communicating with their child about some limits around video game play. So it's definitely an ongoing conversation, and it requires a lot of effort to learn about whatever game is popular and what are some of the features that you may want to be aware of depending on your child's susceptibility. So it takes a lot of like research and forethought.
Oversight.
Before. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Let's get Courtney in here from Harrison Township, Michigan. Hi, Courtney. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
I was going to just comment that my husband and I are avid gamers, and both of my children participate in various video games, social media platforms, etc. And my comment really stems with, you know, parental responsibility. You know, while my children are allowed to participate in video games and other online platforms, they do so in a limited fashion.
Mm-hmm. And what are your limits? So how much time, Courtney?
Oh, gosh, very limited, an hour, maybe two. And we do that because they're involved in other things as well, and they have other responsibilities.
Is that a day, hour or two a day?
Yeah, well, if that, because mm-hmm. they have homework, they have chores, mm-hmm. they have basketball, they have soccer, they have mm-hmm. Girl Scouts.
Don't want to get in the way of those other important activities. Courtney, thank you so much. Sarah Domoff, what are the limits? I mean, there's Courtney saying maybe an hour, maybe two, maybe less, depending on what's going on that day. What is reasonable?
I think really considering what activities a child definitely has to get done during the day and what's important for the child's development. So I think after, you know, going to school, getting their homework done, getting physical activity, seeing how much time is left is usually a good first step. But I really think it's important, and I think this is what the caller was referencing, to have conversations with your children about playing video games and being present with them while they do that so that you can see what it's really like so that you can get into their world and understand it, because that will help tailor some of the recommendations that you may have for your child around their video game play.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from New York City, Nir Eyal, author, tech blogger, and behavioral designer. He's author of the 2014 book, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. He's now finishing up a book on how to stay focused in an age of information overload. That book will be called Indistractable. Nir, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. Good to be here.
So you've worked with companies to create habit-forming technology. Talk to us about that. What is it about these games that is so habit-forming, and how do companies actually create this technology?
Yeah, so for several years, I studied what is it about companies like Fortnite and Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp and YouTube and Slack. And what I wanted to figure out was the underlying psychology that draws users back to using these products. And what I uncovered was these four basic steps that I call the hooked model that is designed into the user experiences of these games or social networks to keep them engaging. And it's not necessarily that these are bad. Mm-hmm. I teach companies. I don't work with gaming companies and social media companies. I work with healthcare companies that are trying to increase patient adherence using these same techniques, or a financial mm-hmm. services product that's trying to help people save money. So trying to use the same methods to help people build healthy habits. But I learned these techniques by studying the gaming companies.
And so what are the methods? What are the techniques?
Yeah, so it works like this. So if we take Fortnite, for example, every hook starts with an internal trigger. Now, an internal trigger is some kind of emotional need. And so in the case of Fortnite, it's the need for autonomy. It's the need for competence, connectedness. These are core fundamental needs, according to self-determination theory, that all of us, particularly children who don't get to express these core needs, are going to the game, are turning to the game to satisfy those needs. The next step of the hook is the action phase, defined as the simplest behavior done in anticipation of a reward. So the very simplest thing you can do to get relief from that psychological discomfort. And it couldn't be easier with Fortnite. You just open the app on your phone or on the PlayStation. Very easy to start playing the game. Next comes the variable reward phase, which integrates this bit of mystery, this bit of uncertainty. So almost like a slot machine type mechanic that we know from the work of B.F. Skinner, back in the 1940s and 50s, around how intermittent rewards, uncertainty creates this increased desire and this increased engagement in the game. And then finally, the last and most important step is the investment phase. And this is where the user puts something into the experience to make it better with use. And Fortnite is really the master of this. When you think about the skins, when you think about the customizations, every time you do those actions and invest in the game, you're storing value. You're making it better and better with use. And so you're more likely to come back.
This all sounds very manipulative to me, Nir. For good reason, right?
Well, look, you know, not to call the kettle black here, but this is at the core of anything that's engaging. I mean, the radio program we're listening to right now uses a very similar model of variable rewards. I have to say something interesting.
There's not an action phase or an investment phase in this program today.
Well, sure there is. Sure there is. The action phase is clicking the button on your radio or saving it to your podcast app. The investment is the fact that you set that preset or you used a podcasting app to download it automatically.
Right.
So sure,
okay.
Yeah, these things are everywhere.
All right. Let me get a call in here. Ryan in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on the line. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, I just want to thanks for taking my call. They've already touched on a lot of things that I wanted to touch on, but I'm actually ranked in the top 100 for North American players for a competitor of Fortnite. So I play a lot of these games, but I'm an older male. I'm in my 30s. And so a lot of these games, I mean, my worry is that they get kids addicted through chemical reactions. So if you go through a 40-minute game with 100 people and you're one of the last 5 people, your heart is beating so fast. When you actually win, they crave that rush, and that's what they're going back for.
Mm. Ryan, thanks so much. Sarah, what is going on in the brain of a child especially who's playing these video games, particularly Fortnite?
Well, I think as Nir mentioned, it's really reinforcing and rewarding. And so we, you know, whether it's a child or adult, we seek out things that are reinforcing. And as was described, there are many elements of the game that keep you wanting to come back to play. And it can be really reinforcing to feel like you accomplished something, to feel, you know, self-efficacy around your performance. And so, you know, if for example, somebody isn't getting that a lot throughout the day, experiencing it, you know, multiple times or in terms of variable reinforcement can be really rewarding and engaging. And so that's what's really challenging about this is that you want to experience the victory, the win, and it can be really hard for some children to turn that off.
Mm. Nir, talk more about the methods or techniques that you listed to hook people into these activities, into activities generally, into these video games specifically. My 13-year-old is very aware when he plays Fortnite of the social judgment that comes. If you don't have the cool accessories, you know, what are his friends going to think about all that? How does that play into the method or technique that developers use in these games?
Yeah, so I think it's very important for our children to understand the incentives of these products that monetize our attention, whether it's Fortnite or Facebook or Instagram. I think it's important that if kids are going to use these products, you know, one of the questions you asked earlier was how do we know when a child is ready? I think a child is ready when they understand the incentives of these companies as well as the costs that they're paying by playing these games. The cost being the opportunity cost of not being able to do other things like to play with your friends outside or to consume other forms of media like a educational television program or a book, for example. So it's important that we, you know, are very frank with our kids in knowing that, you know, these companies are monetizing not only your money when you customize or buy a skin, but also your attention and your time. And so that's very important for our children to know. Not necessarily that it's sinister. You know, we tend to go into these swings of moral panics around the latest technology. When I was a kid, it was Nintendo and television and the other thing. So we gotta maintain a cool head here. But I think as Sarah so eloquently said, it's really about what are the kids giving up instead of playing with these games. And as long as it's done with a controlled amount of time per day, there's nothing wrong with it. I think what the problem is when it goes overboard, when there's real harm done at the expense of playing this game instead of something else.
Back to the phones, Laura in Andover, Massachusetts. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This has been the most educational discussion I've had in a long time. I'm just blown away, like, even when he was, like, bringing up the rewards and the psychology behind it. My son is 9, and he was never allowed to do, like, guns or, you know, those kind of things. And when he wanted to play Fortnite, I actually sat down with him. And my biggest concern was, you know, predators online, you know. And so I was like, you can only play with the people. But also, it wasn't bloody, you know, it wasn't gory. I played it with him for a little bit when he first started. But then I noticed the verbiage. I mean, they're talking about looting, eliminating people, AK-40s, I'm a sniper. You know what I mean? Like, huge words, and most of it's illegal. It's like implicitly going into their brains. Then I was noticing he's a sports kid, and now he doesn't want to go play with his friends outside for a play date. He wants to go inside the house and play Fortnite with them.
All right, Laura, sounds like you have some work to do there. Sarah, would you agree?
Well, I think one of the challenging things is that is kind of getting into the world of Fortnite and being present with your child, because it's so it just takes a lot of like learning and effort around like what are different aspects of the game the child may be particularly drawn to, and that can change over time. And so one of the things that I recommend for parents is to communicate with your child's friends' parents about times when they can play Fortnite, coordinate it. I mean, this is not a structured activity like a sports team maybe, but you can work around, you know, each other's schedules to kind of have like cohesion around, okay, maybe this will take this time for our kids to play Fortnite together, but it's really important that we have them out and about playing outside as well. And so if you can build a cohesion around parents of your children's friends, that can be one way to kind of navigate that.
Let's get Caleb in here from Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Caleb. You're on the air.
Hello, Jane.
Oh, hi.
I have an interesting point of view from a child myself. I am a 10-year-old child.
Okay.
Now, I do play Fortnite, just not all the time. I play maybe once every week, maybe for an hour or so.
Okay.
I think Fortnite should be encouraged, but not a lot. I think there should be a certain amount of time that kids should be able to play.
And you're allowed, how you play only a couple of hours a week, is that right?
That is right. Uh-huh. I prefer to just use my imagination or something like that. I love to run around and stuff like that.
Yeah, and what about the kids at school, Caleb? Are all your friends doing this too?
They play a little bit more, but they more, from what I hear, since we have a morning meeting, usually what I hear is that they like to spend time with their family, but they do play once in a while.
Good perspective. Caleb, you're an exceptional 10-year-old, I have to say. Thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's get Sam in here from South Windsor, Connecticut. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. You got to do better than Caleb, our 10-year-old there. He was pretty terrific.
I know. It's hard to follow.
All right. Go ahead.
I actually had a different point to bring up, the fact that so many kids these days are playing Fortnite, and nobody brought up the correlation between, like, guns in Fortnite and school shootings currently. I'm 26. I remember when Grand Theft Auto Vice City was popular, and there was a huge thing in the news about violent video games, and it's causing violence among kids, and I played Fortnite once. It's not good. I don't like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm an avid video game player, and I don't understand why nobody seems to make the connection. Like, that's not saying I don't think that it has anything to do with gun violence.
Yep.
But I don't know.
Let me take it to the panel. Really, Sam, thanks so much for the call. Nir Eyal, what do you think about that? Do you see a connection?
Well, there's been several studies on this, and the connection has been pretty spurious. The studies don't seem to suggest that there's a connection with gun violence per se.
All right, Sam, thanks so much for the call. Marina, you're in Miami. Welcome to the program.
I am. Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different perspective. I don't play Fortnite at all. I'm quite terrible, but I love watching it. My husband and my brother both play, and sometimes even after dinner, I'll tell my husband, do you want to play Fortnite? And not because I want to play, I just really want to watch.
You just want to watch. You just want to sort of armchair quarterback. Marina, thank you so much. It is big, Nir, on Twitch, the streaming site, the ESPN of video games. Is there an element or technique associated with hooking those who are watching it from your experience?
Yeah, it's actually fascinating because we've never seen this kind of mass appeal of watching others play. And this has been kind of brewing for a while, but really it's taken off with Fortnite. I mean, the audiences are just massive. You know, there's Super Bowl-sized audiences of people watching others play. And frankly, we shouldn't be all that surprised. It's not that different. And we certainly, I don't think we should morally judge people who watch this stuff. You know, people seem to think that this is somehow different from watching a football game. Same exact phenomenon, same variable rewards that keep us engaged.
We're discussing the millions of gamers playing Fortnite this hour, and when love for video games turns into addiction, you can join the conversation. How do you limit your kids' time playing video games? How do you set your own screen time? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're taking a look at Fortnite this hour, the popular video game that has raised some red flags among some parents worried about gaming disorder. You can join the conversation, listeners. Are Fortnite skins on your gift list for the holidays? Have the costs of your in-game purchases added up? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Celebrities have helped to drive the Fortnite craze. Here is a Snapchat video from Steelers wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster, an avid Fortnite fan. This is from earlier this year.
I'm at this party right now, and all I'm thinking about is Fortnite. And like, I'm trying to leave. I'm about to go home right now, playing Fortnite. To like 5 a.m. It's so lit right now, and I'm going home.
I'm speaking with Sarah Domoff, clinical child psychologist and psychology professor at Central Michigan University, and Nir Eyal, author of the 2014 book Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. Let me bring another voice into the conversation now. Joining me from Cambridge, Massachusetts, Eric Klopfer, professor of comparative media studies at MIT. He's also director of the Education Arcade at MIT, a group dedicated to the research and development of educational video games. Eric, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
So you study these issues. How do you view Fortnite?
So Fortnite is an interesting phenomenon, partially because the success was not an originally designed success.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of the kinds of things that I see kids doing and learning in there, I think it actually has some value. We do a lot of work in terms of thinking about what are the kinds of skills that kids need to be learning in general today, not necessarily through games. And they're the kinds of things that align with the kinds of things they are doing in games, you know, solving open-ended problems, communicating around complex issues, trying to work within systems. And these are things that actually Fortnite does reasonably well.
So when you hear the concern among some parents and what we've been talking about this hour about addiction and becoming addicted to these video games, do you see that as a problem, or do you see that the positives outweigh the negatives with this?
I think it's a bit of a mixed bag, you mentioned one of my titles. I'm also a parent, a parent of a teen who plays a lot of Fortnite, and I play with him sometimes. So I see both sides. I definitely see value in there, and I actually my son has played other games that I find a lot less value in, and so I do think that there's some. I encourage him to be thoughtful about what he does there. Both in-game and around the game, I think Fortnite has, like a lot of other popular games, has spawned a whole phenomenon of kids doing, whether it's streaming on Twitch like you described, mm-hmm. or I saw the other day my son was designing, what might the next skin look like that you might have on one of your characters? So it spawns all this sort of fan art, fan media around the game, and participating in that kind of culture is actually a really valuable thing, as well as the game itself.
So fan art, fan media, I mean, you talk about the 21st century skills that kids may be learning from Fortnite, problem solving, social interaction, working in a group. Can you give a specific example of that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. So certainly when you there's different ways of playing Fortnite. And you can play sort of last man standing where you're just by yourself, but there are 2- and 4-man squads, and being able to coordinate with your teammates within that space is really challenging. Thinking about if you all play the same role, it doesn't work very well. You have to think about how you divide and conquer those roles, whether it's about what kind of weapon you use or where you stand or how you move, all those things. Coordinating those is what determines who's going to succeed and who's going to fail in that regard. And sometimes that's with players who you know really well, who you've established a relationship with. Other times you'll drop in and play with people who you don't know. And so it's about developing those skills for being able to assess who your partners are and what their skills and strengths are and how you're going to be able to complement those. And those are the kinds of things we need to be able to do every day in a lot of tasks that we do in our lives and our careers.
I hesitate to ask with a 13-year-old who loves to play Fortnite, and maybe sometimes too much, but would you go so far as to say that Fortnite could be used in some sort of educational space?
Yeah, I teach a spring class on designing educational games, and one of the things we do in there is design curriculum around existing commercial off-the-shelf games. And while I haven't used Fortnite in that class yet, I have used World of Warcraft in the past, which was a very popular massively multiplayer game, and some students designed some really great curriculum around that. I'm thinking about using Fortnite in this spring's curriculum to see what they'll come up with for that.
Those MIT kids are lucky. Let's get Ian in here in Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Ian. You're on the air.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, sure. So I'll set the scene for you here. So it's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving night, and I'm showing up to my sister's house, and my nephew is performing what's called a Fortnite dance. So apparently, there's these animations in these games where you can make your character dance, you know. And then the next thing you know, we're at the table and we're eating dinner, and he's having some of this casserole, this sweet potato casserole, and he says, "Hey, this is it, Chief." So really, it's just it's a kind of shifting the conversation towards meme culture and this idea that, you know, the streamers and the people that play this game online, they created this almost community where if you play Fortnite and you're a kid, or maybe you're a young adult, maybe in high school, you almost gravitate towards this community, too, because you want to just keep, you know, finding more things out about the game or keep talking about the game amongst your friends. So even if you don't have friends, say, in your local area that play this game, you tend to see children or young adults go to these online communities and talk among themselves and these memes and this extra culture outside of the game.
Connecting
and
with
like
others.
That also adds another element of like addiction to the game, so that, you know, you're not only are you playing the game for the win, for that sweat on the back of your neck when you're, you know, almost the last man standing, but you're also, you know, you really want to be part of that community online.
I hear it, Ian. Thank you very much. Nikki is in Miami Beach. Hi, Nikki. You're on the air. Nikki's gone, but Christina's in Tampa. Hi, Christina. Are you there? Christina?
Oh.
Hi. Go ahead.
My almost 11-year-old son absolutely loves Fortnite. I would say he is obsessed with the game, as are all of his 11-year-old friends and classmates, and they talk about it nonstop. What I will say is that what I think is very important about Fortnite, it does absolutely affect a child's reward centers in their brain. And what happens is they start to become not so much excited about the rest of life. Mm-hmm. So what I've seen happen is that my son and a group of his friends that used to play outside every day no longer play outside because they're upstairs, you know, or in their rooms, you know, playing a video game for hours at a time. And as much as we put restrictions on it, it does take the excitement out of just kicking a ball outside or playing a pickup game of basketball. So I see that a child who was once excited about being outside is wanting to get inside and
get on
play,
their controller.
Inside on Fortnite.
Christina, thanks. I'm with you. I appreciate your call. Jean on Facebook tells us, any parent who's concerned that their kids are playing too much Fortnite should set a timetable when their kids can play. Parents should also watch with their kids as they play and open a communication with them, not just leave them alone for hours at a time. This serves as a bonding experience, exercise with the child, and helps understand limits. Sarah, what can parents learn from playing with their kids? What do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of things parents may want to think about when they're playing with their kids. One is, like, how do they handle losing? What are they saying to their friends or that they're playing with? How does the child cope with not being able to play? Or, like, for example, how do they handle successes? So talking to them about different motivations for playing mm-hmm. Fortnite, and then also how they cope with, you know, successes or failures is really important, and communicating with them about that, understanding what aspects of it they find enjoyable is a great way to start a conversation and to keep the conversation going over time, because the child may find other aspects of the game really rewarding as it frequently changes.
Eric Klopfer, how do you see that element of this?
I think Sarah is exactly right that that sort of playing can sort of give you some of those insights into how the child is thinking. I think it's certainly about winning and losing. I also think that it's important, as I said, there's some learning that can happen through the game. But learning doesn't just happen by playing the game. Learning typically happens even in the way that we design our own games. It happens through playing the game and reflecting on that experience afterwards. To help you sort of abstract and think about what you did. And I think that kind of conversation, that's what I try to do with my kids when they play games, is to help them, when they do something, then help them reflect on that afterwards. How did that move, how did that communication with your teammate affect the outcome? How might have you done that differently? How might you have you applied that in a new situation? So encouraging them to reflect on that and make some of those abstractions that they can apply to other situations, whether it be in-game or out-of-game, is something else that I try to think about. Mm.
Nir Eyal, is that any of that included in how these games are actually created in the underlying psychology of how they're created?
Well, people want to play with players who are fun to play with. And so, you know, good sportsmanship is rewarded in these type of social experiences. And that's a big reason why people enjoy playing them, is the connectedness. That's a fundamental human need. I will say, though, I think, you know, it's great to be part of a conversation that's positive about the game. But I think it's important also to realize the opportunity cost, that, you know, none of this should come at the expense of free play. I think the nation is going through a crisis where we really don't have the kind of free play that we used to have. When I was a kid, the neighborhood saying of children playing outside. So while a limited amount of gameplay is not going to be a problem, 45 minutes, an hour a day, we really want to make sure that we schedule time for our kids to just have time together to solve problems. Nothing's going to replace that real world experience.
That's what our last caller was just talking about. I agree. Frank is in Indianapolis. Hi, Frank. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. I just wanted to comment that my son is 16 years old. I mean, he is actually part of a group now that is geared towards recovery, addiction recovery for video game players. And that often, I mean, video games don't have anything necessarily inherently wrong with them, but like any other addiction, you got to find the root cause, which is typically maladaptive coping mechanisms at a young age. And when a kid starts to have that sort of behavior and they look towards video games, then it can become a massive problem in life. And this group has existed for many years, and they actually are geared online, where people can go and meet online and speak online, just like any other recovery meetings.
Frank, thank you so much for the call. Sarah Domoff, Frank brings up a good point. You know, this is all happening against the backdrop of bigger, broader concerns about social media and smartphone overuse. I mean, this deluge of digital entertainment is just going to become more and more commonplace, is it not?
Right. And I think, you know, what I try to do at my clinic and in my research is try to help prevent screen media, children engaging in different video game play or other types of screen media use, prevent later problems related to such use, and creating a balance, because for a lot of these different mediums, we cannot completely avoid them. And so what's really imperative is to set limits early on, help children learn how to regulate their use, but then really be involved and, you know, set guidelines around use if problems appear to arise, and to really, you know, prevent future issues by checking to see is my child only playing video games to the exclusion of other activities? Is he or she using it for, you know, mood modification or to feel better and really struggling with other ways to cope with whatever experiences he or she may be having? And so part of the clinical work that we do is we try to figure out what are some of the motivations for play, and then also how can we build, build the child's activities throughout the day to meet those goals outside of video game play if it is becoming problematic.
Couple more minutes here in our hour. Let's get Jacob in quickly from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Jane. I heard the conversation. I had to chime in. So I play a fair bit of Fortnite, not a lot,
okay.
But I can definitely understand how the media and everything is getting to it, and there's too much saturation of people being on their phones and being on the game too much and just mm-hmm. being addicted to it, that it's a real problem in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. And I have friends of mine and my younger siblings who are struggling with it themselves, and I've tried to communicate with them that, yeah, it's a great way to like have fun and pass time, but it doesn't really make up for the real world experiences. Yeah, real world experiences. You got it.
Got it, Jacob. Thank you for the call in Virginia. Let's go to North Carolina. David is in Charlotte. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm going to try to make this very quickly. I am 31 years old. I used to be very addicted to video games up until about 2 or 3 years ago, and I've since then found a career path that I am very motivated and interested in. And I wouldn't say I'm any less of have any less of an addictive personality, but it's that I've managed to focus my addictions into something that is positive. I'm really curious about getting a psychologist's perspective on this. Is addiction itself a bad thing, or is it video games that are taking people that have possibly motivated personalities and directing it towards video games, which are not inherently useful, in my opinion?
David, thank you. Sarah, quick answer here.
It's going to be hard to do a quick answer for this, but what I can say is that part of the challenge in studying this and helping individuals with this is really deciphering between what's enthusiastic engagement with video games and to the point where it becomes interfering with a person's life. And so part of the trick and what we need to do in terms of research is really try to decipher this so that we can develop best practices for helping people who may be experiencing dependence on video games.
All right, David, thanks for the call. Just a few seconds left here. Near Eyal, how long do gaming sensations like this typically last? After what amount of time do they typically wane? And do you think it's different with Fortnite? What do you see here?
Yeah, we've seen this trend come and go and come and go again and again with different, it was Pokemon a few years ago, and then before that it was Angry Birds, and before that it was Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. So these things kind of come and go. Fortnite definitely has a lot of things going for it. I would like to add just a few quick tips for people listening who are trying to moderate their use. You know, we talked about scheduling time.
Yep.
If you don't plan your day, somebody's going to plan it for you. Removing external triggers. I think a big mistake that parents make is having technology in kids' rooms. They don't need to have the technology in the room. Keep it outside in a more family focused place. And then prevent distraction with the technology. You know, your iPhone today comes with a functionality called screen time, where you can set limits around how long kids have access to certain apps so that it's not you telling them to get off the device, it's the phone. And then finally, you know, for some folks, there are underlying issues, a lack of autonomy, competence, connectedness. And for those type of things, we need to dig deeper and figure out what we're really trying to escape with these devices.
Great conversation, really helpful for parents, for all of us. Near Eyal, author of the 2014 book Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. Great to have you. Thanks for the insights.
Thanks so much.
Sarah Domoff, clinical child psychologist, professor at Central Michigan University. Great for the clinical perspective. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Eric Klopfer, professor of comparative media studies, director of the Education Arcade at MIT. Eric, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Continue the conversation, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.